Okay. I did the most important part. I remembered to hit record. I have a friend who, when we do work together, we record, he has a sign that he holds up. It says, don't forget to hit record, because I've done that on multiple occasions. And then, you know, it's not good. Most hardest part of the conversation. So I am so excited that you're here and that you agreed to say yes to being here. And so Charlene Brophy is here with us today. And I don't know where to begin to list off all of your incredible accomplishments. And I don't know about you. I sometimes find it like kind of, when people list off my accomplishments, I get a little like, you know, hot in the cheeks a little bit, but I always tell women, it's really important that you recognize and honor your accomplishments, because if you don't, nobody else will. And so I thought I would start off with telling everybody who you are. I'm sure you've got way more to that story than what I know. So I'm going to list off what I know, and then I'm going to invite you to tell us a little bit more about you to kick this conversation off. So you're the president and CEO of PhoneMed, which is an international virtual healthcare company that provides nurse advice and triage, from what I understand, to over 25 million people throughout not only Canada, the United States, but also the Caribbean. And you are based in Newfoundland. When I look through your list of accomplishments, you were named Atlantic Business Magazine's top 50 CEO in Atlantic Canada for the fifth straight year, and were inducted into the magazine's Hall of Fame. So congratulations on that. You've also been awarded Newfoundland and Labrador's Organization of Women Entrepreneurs Entrepreneurial Excellence Award. Been the recipient of 4 Business Excellence Awards from the St. John's Board of Trade, and awarded the Canadian Broadcasting Corporation Innovator of the Year by Atlantic Business Magazine. So maybe I've forgotten some things that I don't have on that list, but pausing right there, like, that's an incredible list of accomplishments. So we're really, really proud and honored to have you here with us today. So thank you, Charlene, for making time to be with us.
Well, thank you. I'm delighted to be here. And like you, when you hear that, you think, who is that person? And, you know, it's wonderful to be recognized, but you know, it takes a village, no doubt about it. So there's a whole bunch of other people around me that made all of those awards and recognition happen, undoubtedly.
Yeah. I mean, that's one thing that really stood out to me about, you know, researching you and learning about you. Anytime that I see you speaking about you, you're always speaking about the team and the accomplishments and the people that are around you. So that is something that I definitely picked up on from, you know, the research that I've done on you. So one of the things that I noticed about your description of your business and your team and everybody who, you know, went through the pandemic, and the amount of increased demand that your business was, you know, dealing with as a result of the pandemic and afterwards, as we're going through the other side, is one of the things that you said is like, everybody really stepped up and answered the call. And I thought, what a wonderful sort of metaphor for what our conversation is today, because we're here to talk about leadership and we're here to talk about female leadership. And so I think about that whole notion of answering the call of leadership, you know, as a woman. And I think that there's a moment at some point in our career where we answer the call, where we decide that, you know, hey, I'm going to take myself and maybe this thing that I'm doing seriously, and maybe I am a leader. And so what was the moment when you decided you were going to answer the call of leadership? How did you know when you were ready to answer the call?
Yeah, you know, it's funny because I don't come from a business background. I'm a registered nurse by background and was a bedside nurse for many, many years. And when I joined this brand new startup that was just getting off the ground in St. John's 25 years ago, I joined as a nurse answering calls. And it was a brand new business. We had just one client, a small family practice in Southern Oregon. And we had to have 7 nurses to provide the 24/7 coverage. And this little town didn't have a doctor after hours, but they had a small community hospital and clinic there. So they couldn't find a doctor to come in and stay. So they thought, well, why don't we have a phone system whereby we can send calls to somebody clinical and they can manage the calls and call our doctors if need be and so on. Hence, you know, how we got our start. And right from the get-go, even though we had no business and we all wondered in the early, you know, months and years how we were going to survive, right from the beginning, I saw that, you know, healthcare is changing. I witnessed it firsthand at the bedside. I saw the challenges we were dealing with, the lengthy wait periods, patients were waiting for care, and how many times the system was utilized by people who would be better off treated at home when they could be treated. So to save the access to care for those who really needed a hands-on care in a bricks and mortar facility and so on. So I really believed in it. But back then, again, we weren't making enough to survive. And we had to start telling nurses or asking nurses to take leave without pay and so on. And we lost almost everybody. And at that point in time, I believed so strongly in it that I was in a place where I could take a cut in salary or some months no salary in lieu for some ownership in the company. And then anyone will tell you, once you got some skin in the game, everything changed. And then I was determined to figure out this path forward. So I think that leadership piece that I didn't know was innate in me was there from the beginning. And I guess if I look back over my career, when you're a nurse and you're caring for others, you're their advocate. So you already are a leader just by being a nurse and caring for others and so on and being their voice when they can't be the voice themselves. So many times we come from backgrounds and we think, oh, I don't have a business degree or I'm not a CA and I can't possibly do that. But no matter which career path I think you come from, we're all leaders when you care about making a difference for yourself or for others around you, for your community and so on. So I guess it was already there. And then over the years after that, you know, I moved through the ranks fairly quickly in various different leadership positions, mostly because we couldn't afford to pay anybody else to do it. So I kind of had to do it and then, you know, took over as CEO, I guess, I don't even know, 10, 12 years ago now and so on. So I think the call was inside me right from day one. It was something that I knew was right. I knew the time was right. I knew the, you know, we had an aging demographic and we had a system that was really struggling, healthcare system to survive. And it seemed like a viable solution. And then over the years, I've certainly had success, but not in my wildest dreams did I ever imagine what would happen over the last 2.5 years. And when the pandemic hit at almost the exact same moment in two countries, you know, overnight, we doubled our staffing almost numbers and so on. So, you know, today you had referenced, we had served 25 million. Today we serve over 40 million people, for example. And when the pandemic hit in 7 days, in Newfoundland alone, imagine Newfoundland's a pretty tiny province. We brought in an additional 100 people in 1 week just to be able to manage the demand. And you talk about stepping up and taking it on. I almost felt like we had to, because if not, where would people go? The emergency rooms, people were afraid to go. And what was worrying me about people who didn't have access was worrying me even more about people who needed to be there and wouldn't go because they were afraid. They were afraid they were sick and so on. And how did they know if they were sick enough to go? So these are the ones that I worried about. And when we had queues full, waiting hours and hours, and I don't even want to tell you how long for somebody to pick up the phone to say hello, that's what really kept me up, because I've never been one to overpromise and underdeliver. Mm-hmm. And that worried me a great deal. So, you know, the community came together and I brought together resources from other areas that you would not, other sectors you wouldn't even imagine. Like, for example, we couldn't find a computer in Newfoundland to buy because everybody started to work from home all of a sudden and every computer was bought. So we put out a call for help and then the Eastern School District stepped up and said, well, we've got computers, we've got monitors, we can help you. And within hours, I had a big truck backing into our driveway, unloading computers for us to be able to send out to our nurses and frontline staff to manage the calls and so on. And anytime that I travel or talk and, you know, tell a little bit about our company and our success, people say, it's really too bad you're based there in Newfoundland. You know, such a small province, you're so far removed from the rest of the world. And I say, oh my God, no, it's been the polar opposite experience for me. It's because we're here in Newfoundland and because we got a community that supports us and we support them in return that this has worked. You know, so we brought on changes and had great success with our service pieces, no doubt about it, but also with our technology pieces as well to get it out there and to trial it right here in Newfoundland because the community and our partners and the province was willing to work with us. So I'm very quick to say, don't think because you live in this small little province or this, you know, in Atlantic Canada where you don't have the same access that you can't be successful. So some of the greatest growth and, you know, greatest success stories come from Atlantic Canada because of our geography.
Mm-hmm. And our resilience and our tenacity and the community that we are in. And, you know, I think our ability, I was coming back after the hurricane, which of course, you know, has been devastating for so many of us and provinces. And we were all touched by that and reminded of the resiliency of, you know, people in Atlantic Canada and how we will, you know, do whatever it takes to make sure that we are cared for. And, you know, it sounds like that's a big part of, you know, your story. And what really strikes me about what you're talking about, and one of the things that I see in women who are in leadership today, is maybe not really sure what their path is, like maybe not really connected to the purpose or really clear on the impact that they want to make. And I think that that can leave some women feeling like, I just have a job. Like, I don't really have a career. I don't really have a direction that I want to take myself in. And so what would you, do you have any advice or any recommendations for women who might just feel like, I just have a job. I don't really have any, I'm not really making an positive impact here. I'm kind of floundering. I don't really know what to do with the next sort of phase of my career and how to make an impact. What would you say to those women?
Yeah. And, you know, I think for, I look forward to the day when we don't have to talk about women business leaders anymore, when it's just, you know, it's to be expected and so on. And even though we've made great strides because of people like you and individuals and organizations talking about it, it's unfortunate we still have to talk about it and talk about it so much. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, we look at the stats and, you know, you and I have chatted about the stats for women's leaders, and it's nowhere near where we need to be or where we should be. Mm-hmm. And I think it's because we share our stories, we're going to make a difference. Mm-hmm. And, you know, as women, we often keep our heads down. And, you know, lots of times I meet people and they say, we didn't know anything about your company. We didn't know you were here in Newfoundland. We didn't know the breadth of services. We didn't know you had hundreds and hundreds of employees. Mm. And I, you know, I always say, we don't need to talk about the story all the time. We just need to talk about how we help each other share their stories.
Right.
And, you know, for women who are starting out, it's really tough. And, you know, I spoke recently about, you know, when I started 25 years ago, I grew up with the old boys club. And I was the only Canadian on the board of directors. I was the only female in a leadership position and so on. And I will tell you, it was tough. And back at that time in particular, I would never ask for help. You know, I'm a nurse by background. I didn't grow up looking at financial statements or P&Ls or, you know, I had such a learning curve to learn what a margin was and what it made such a difference, you know, what the CM is and why we need to look. It was, but I taught it to myself because I was too embarrassed to ask for help because I felt it would be a sign of weakness for those men would come and say, well, that's a, you know, a little Newfoundlander or Canadian. She's a nurse, but she doesn't understand that. So it was tough. I learned a lot of tough lessons along the way. And I'm determined that other women leaders are not going to have to learn the same lessons because they're not afraid to ask for help or not afraid to ask for a hand up if need be and so on, because that's what we should and should do. But what I would say to women is you got to believe in what you're doing. So if you're in an organization and you don't see a path for growth there, or nor do you want it, it may be a sector or a business you're not interested in, learn from it. Learn what you need to learn. Learn what it takes to be a leader and observe others. What are other people doing right? And what are some of the leaders doing wrong? And that's how you learn so many lessons. And I think for all of us over the years, we've all had leadership, leaders in our various workplaces that we thought, I loved how they did that. Or I loved how, you know, they made me feel part of the organization and so on. And others who didn't, who wouldn't even, you know, maybe necessarily say hello if you're in an elevator with them or riding off and so on. So I think it starts off, number one, respect yourself, but always respect everybody else. And if you're in a role or in a position or in a job that you don't see a path forward, just think, what are you good at? What are others in the organization who you admire, or what are they good at? And then how do you take some of those lessons learned and do whatever you want to do? And not everybody has to go out and start their own business. But you know what? Everybody can take lessons learned from where they are now and how they move up where they are, or how do they find another organization that will appreciate, you know, the values that they're bringing to the organization and will appreciate enough to allow them to grow. So in our organization, we're very big at promoting from within. And if we bring in individuals who, and many times I can tell you from day one, I can see it in them because they listen and they care and they ask questions about the company. It shows interest that those are the people who's going to stay, you know, stay the course with you. And I'm very quick to recognize their accomplishments and to help them celebrate them. And they've moved up. Some of my most senior leadership positions today are from individuals who started maybe just even answering phones, or nurses, or, you know, individuals who just started in administrative roles who got it and who, you know, were saying, have you ever thought about this, or you ever thought about this particular sector and so on. And don't be afraid to speak up, because if your voice is not heard, your voice is never going to be heard. So you got to start the conversation. And if you find that your leadership is not listening to it, acknowledging it, then maybe it's time to start to spin and find another organization where the leaders will.
It's so interesting to me because I've been, you know, kind of paying attention to some of this conversation that's been happening on social media about, you know, the great resignation and quietly quitting and burnout. And I'm hearing you say, and I agree with you, that that's not really the recipe for a successful career. Like if you're just going to check out and quit, but stay in your job and not use your voice and not share your opinion or your perspective, or maybe, you know, sort of respectfully challenge what's going on in your environment, that's not really a recipe for success.
So much of our lives are spent at work.
I know.
I always feel for people who every morning get up and count down on their calendar the days till retirement. That's just, I really do. I feel for them. And I hope nobody in my organization ever feels that way, because I wouldn't want anybody to spend their time doing that. And if that's where women are today and feeling today, then that's a sure sign it's time. And it's easy to say and hard to do, especially if you're walking out on a pension and whatever the case may be. But there's ways to figure that out. Yeah. You know, talk to somebody in the know. Figure out, you know, if you've got 10 more years or 15 more years, my God, life is short. You got to make sure when you get up in the morning, you walk out the door to earn a living, you're feeling that you're making a difference. Whether, you know, I'm in healthcare, or whether you're in a supermarket and you're a cashier at the grocery store, whatever the case may be, everybody is making a difference. And so many people don't realize that, you know, that the voice they hear from that cashier or whatever your job is, it's making a difference in somebody else's life. So you need to feel that. You need to feel passion for whatever it is that one does or decides to do going forward.
Yeah. And figuring out whatever that is. I mean, we all have the opportunity to figure that out. It's a matter of, you know, taking the time and believing that you're worthy of that, I think, is a really important step. You know, it's been interesting for me also, you know, studying and listening to the conversations around burnout. Like it's such a hot topic. And, you know, also something that was really sort of problematic in the healthcare industry as well as many other industries. And when I, you know, I study a lot about the impact of these things on women as somebody who studies women and gender issues. And, you know, it's been reported that women are more burned out now than they were a year ago, and that the gap in burnout between men versus women has almost doubled. So what this is translating to is 1 in 3 women considering leaving the workforce altogether or downshifting their career. So, you know, you and I were talking about how many women we have in senior leadership positions in Atlantic Canada. And I believe the most current statistic is putting it at around 32%. And so if we are looking at that number, and then we're looking at, you know, what women are feeling and how they are experiencing their lives and their work right now, if we have more women downshifting or leaving the workforce, that's not great for lots of reasons. So what do you think might be going on? And, you know, what's been your experience around burnout specifically in your industry, or maybe women who are experiencing burnout right now in their jobs, and what we can start to do about that? And our responsibility as leaders, I think, is even more important of how we handle that in our work environments.
Right. So from what I'm hearing, and I do a lot of mentoring work as well, locally with you know, young female entrepreneurs who are looking to get started and so on. What I'm hearing a lot is a lot of the burnout comes not only from their work, but from trying to balance the work-life responsibilities and so on. And that I've heard from many that even though their husbands have stepped up or their partners or whatever the case may be, it's still not the same. A mother carries a lot of responsibility, as child caring for children and family responsibilities and so on. So I'm hearing often the partners need to step up even more than they're stepping up now, number one. But the other piece I talk about as well is, how do you find that? And I've always said that for me, I don't think I ever found work-life balance because I always had work-life integration. Mm-hmm. So my kids grew up in the business while I grew up. So they came from school to my office and did their homework here. I will be at the dinner table at home at night after dinner while they were doing their homework. I was on with some crises, you know, somewhere throughout the US or Canada that we had to deal with and so on. And it never seemed to interfere with our life because it became such a part of who they are. Mm-hmm. And, you know, as they are grown now, and I've seen in them that they understand the sense of accountability, no matter what your role is, no matter what position your industry or position you're in or and so on, is they understand the importance of accountability for roles and responsibility for people who work for you or people who work with you or the community that you're supporting and so on. So I think it's important for women who are thinking, I can't do that because I've got, you know, 3 children under 10 and there's no way I could ever do it. But I think women would find a way to do it if they find the passion and something they love. And it's really, really tough. And I know we keep talking about it and, you know, others may say, oh, it's easy for them to say, find something you love, but I'm too tired to find it. But you do, sometimes you just need some quiet time to think, well, what is it I want to do? You know, what do I enjoy? And number one, is it an industry? Or, you know, what makes me feel good after a day's work? And then think about those pieces that make a difference in your own personal life. And then use them to think, well, what else do I want to do? And where can I go with this talent? You know, maybe it's somebody's personality, whether it's their positive spirit, maybe it's their intellect and their, you know, finance abilities or whatever. They need to find somewhere they can go where that's recognized and appreciated, and they see a future path forward. Nobody wants to be stuck in a dead-end position where you think, you know, you're just in there, you're just a body filling a seat rather than making a difference or having a voice. So I think it's just finding that inner voice in all of us and listening to it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So finding the time to listen to it, asking yourself the right questions. I always think you should lean towards the things that energize you, because if you find the passion and you find the work that energizes you, then it fuels you, like, you know, and it's not always going to be that way. There's ebbs and flows to everything, you know. There are days when we are on fire and have tons of energy, and there are days when that's not true, you know? And so I think it's about having the resilience to kind of bounce back from those situations. And right now, I think we've got an opportunity. I think especially we have an opportunity for women in the workplace right now. I think there's no better time than right now as an employee to really advocate for what you want. You know, employers are listening right now. They are wanting to retain talent. They are wanting to grow their business after this period of instability, and really look towards the future. So I think there's no better time than right now to advocate for what you want, to sit down with your employer and have those conversations about what do you hope to see in your future. And hopefully, you know, they're going to want to have that conversation with you and help to clear the path and unlock some doors for you so that you can, you know, move closer towards your goals. So what would you say to women who think that they can't handle senior leadership? Because I know a lot of women who I've had conversation with who look at, you know, what it takes to succeed at the top, quote unquote, the top, and think like, I can't handle that. Like, I'm already so overloaded. Like, I can't take anymore. So I'm not going to go for the promotion. I'm not going to, like, I'm just going to duck out. I'm going to stay where I'm at. What would you say to those women? Because I know a lot of those women who are like, I can't take anymore right now.
Yeah. You know, I think for all of us, change is risky. You know, anytime you're making any changes, decisions, whether to take on a new role within your organization or to take a new job with a brand new organization or whatever the case may be, I always get a pen and paper and I write it down. And at the top, I always write, if I don't make a change, tomorrow is going to be the same as today. And a year from now, it's going to be the same as today and so on. So is the change risky enough to make it worth your while to maybe finally do something in your work life that makes you happy to go to work? Because, you know, if you're not happy to go to work today, and it's not just because of a particular leader or because of a particular role, if it's just you don't feel the values within the organization, that's not going to change. Mm-hmm. So if that's the case and you're feeling there's no path forward where you are, if you don't make a change, then it's going to be Groundhog Day over and over and over again. And, you know, some people may have to choose that path because sadly, not all of us have enough of a choice that, you know, financially we can't take a chance on, you know, on making a change or whatever the case may be. Mm-hmm. So there's always a risk, but you never know the outcome of the risk you don't take. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of weighing where one is in their life now to decide, how much longer can I do this? And is it worth the consequences on your mental and physical health if you're staying in a position where you feel undervalued and you don't feel respected and you don't feel like you're making a change to somebody somewhere? Then I think it's time to really look deep inside and say, well, I got to make a change. I just need to figure out how. And sometimes it's just you need to find somebody that you can talk to. And just, is there somebody in the community think that is respected and that you feel, can I just have a 5-minute conversation with you? And I get these calls all the time. You just mm-hmm. have 5 minutes to listen to an idea. And all you need sometimes is to find somebody that you trust and respect to just say, I just want to know what you would do. And be prepared going into the quick chat to say, this is why this is really risky for me, whether it's financially or whether it's going to be family related, there's going to be pushback from the organization or whatever the case may be. And then just say, what would you say to that? And sometimes just having somebody else to bounce ideas off will make such a big difference in helping them take the leap forward. But again, it's going back to what I said at the beginning, you never know the outcome of the chance you didn't take. And are you willing to stay for months, years, your lifetime doing something that you feel is not contributing to yourself, to your family, or to society as a whole?
Mm-hmm. You never know what's going to happen if you don't take it. And I think a lot of the times, like looking at the situation and saying, okay, well, I know that there's all these reasons why I feel like this is risky or that I shouldn't do this. And I think we walk around with a long list of reasons why we think we can't have something. And that list and those reasons can speak very loudly to us. I think we also need to look at the other list, which is all the reasons why we can make that possible. And I think that that's somewhat of an entrepreneurial mindset that you develop over a period in time. And I think that even women who are not an entrepreneur, I think you are the entrepreneur of your career. If you really look at it that way, you know, you are a business of your own, you know, I've always kind of thought about that in a funny way, you know? And so there's going to be trade-offs. You're going to have to face some truths and there will be some trade-offs if you want something different, if you decide that that's what you want. And then I think also looking like, am I ready, willing, and able to do what it's going to take to, you know, go after whatever that thing is that I want. Or the choice is to say, no, I'm not. And I'm going to stay here. And this is what I'm choosing. Yeah. But to think like you don't have what it takes, or you're not smart enough, or you don't have enough resources to pull it off. Like I hear a lot of women thinking like, I can't. And that might be because of somebody else's version of success, just because another person looks very overwhelmed in the way in which they're leading or running their business, or is very, doesn't mean that you're going to operate it the same way. So don't compare yourself to other people's versions of, you know, how they run their lives or how they lead necessarily. Like think about how you can do it and make it possible. I know you were saying, I can't wait for the day that we don't have to talk about the conversation about women, and I'm with you. And yet here we still are. Yeah. The conversation is real. And so what do you think about the power gap in leadership in not only in Atlantic Canada? I mean, we could say it's all over the world. It's not just an issue here. What's your reaction to that when we look at, you know, the power gap from a, you know, a gendered lens in leadership positions in Atlantic Canada?
Yeah. And again, I can't believe we're still talking about this. And even though, again, I know we've made steps, it's still only baby steps compared to where we need to go. And sometimes, to be honest, I almost find it funny, because even to this day, if I walk into a meeting with a client group or some business partner or whatever, and I walk in with a couple of my male colleagues in suits, and somebody introduces me as the CEO, I still see the look in their eyes of surprise. And I almost feel like laughing out loud sometimes and saying, just get over it. Like, it's amusing to me. And, you know, I think all we can do is just keep telling our stories. And for us in Atlantic Canada, in particular, we're storytellers, as you know, and we love that. But it's frustrating for me that that's still happening at the level it's happening. And I think the only way we're going to elicit change is to empower women to feel the value in them that we see in them. And I think without sharing our stories, they're not going to see that. And it's really, you know, I always say, you walk into a room and you may feel so intimidated by some, you know, you don't know a person in here, or it's a big opportunity and the chances of you landing it are small and so on. Even though I may not feel the confidence, I feel I need to project it. So I always walk into a room and feel like I own it. And I just keep telling myself that, you know, there's nobody any better. There's nobody any worse. We're just all equals here. And tell the story of what we've done and what we can do and why we want to do it. And I think it makes a difference, because women in business leaders in particular, I mean, women are known to be kinder and gentler and honest and so on. And that's always the way, I've been, not only in my work life, but in my own personal life. I always think I live with integrity and I lead with integrity and so on. And I've never been one to be cocky, for lack of a better term, of what I can do and can't do. Because if you can't do it, say you can't do it. If somebody is asking you to do something that maybe you can do, but you know you shouldn't do, maybe it's because it's not the right move for an organization. And lots of times we have clients wanting to come offering, you know, a particular piece of business or line of business to add value to what they're doing today. And I'm quick to say, you can do that and we can do that for you, but you may want to rethink that, because there's another solution. You may want to save the resources for the human piece and use some of the artificial intelligence for the other pieces that could be a lower cost point for you, so you have more money to back end some of the AI with human resources and so on. So I think we need to sometimes, even though we may not feel it, we need to project it. And you'd be surprised that sometimes just projecting confidence that you may not necessarily feel from within gives you a sense of power. And to hold on to that and not to be afraid, you know, I think we all suffer from this imposter syndrome sometimes, you know, we're not smart enough. We don't have enough education. This is not the area that I excel in, or I've never done this before and so on. But you know what? Sometimes just pretending that you do feel it will make you feel it. And just be honest in the story of what you're telling about where you came from and where you want to go. And by selling yourself, I think you sell others onto, well, this is somebody that I want to work with, because they're obviously confident they can make a change. And then others will see the confidence in you as well.
Mm-hmm. And I'm also hearing you say, it's okay to not know. Like, confidence doesn't mean that you have it all together. For me, confidence means like, I know what I know. And I know that there's a whole bunch of stuff that I don't know. And I'm either going to learn that or I'm not. And that's okay. Because there's probably somebody else out there who knows that really well. And if I can learn to like leverage them or collaborate with them, you know, then great. We got a full picture.
Yeah, I agree with you. And you know what? You're right. It's those relationships that matter, because we don't need to rebuild everything on our own. Yeah. And if we can leverage resources in the community or others that, you know, that we can utilize to make our case stronger, then we should be doing that. And, you know, so partnership is a big piece of our organization and how we've had success moving forward and so on. But you're absolutely right. You can't do everything. You don't know everything. I've made so many mistakes. And I think you talk to any business leader who will go, oh, my God, I can't believe I said that. Or, you know, I wish I hadn't taken on this contract or whatever the case may be. But it's only by making mistakes that you learn what you can and should do next time around. And I, I guess when you get to this age, I can look back and laugh at some of the mistakes I made and how little I knew at the time, and look at myself and go, well, wow, you were really brave to try that. Didn't work, that you're brave to try it. And
yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's all about trying it and learning from the lessons, you know, that there, and if we don't try anything new, then we don't learn anything new. We stay stuck, yeah. Right. We stay frozen in place. It's, you know, it's very interesting to me when I see that in women. I think that a lot of, you know, we're afraid of failing. And I think we've been told a bit of a lie that we're supposed to have it all and do it all. And I think that that's a big shift that I'm noticing in women right now is like, I don't know if I want all, I might just want some, and I want real clarity about what that some is. And when I figure that out, then I'm going to do that really well, maybe even with excellence. But I don't know if I want it all. And yeah. I think that's the trap that we fell into, because how can you do it all? Like, that's a bit of a, illusion, you know? And I think that that has contributed to a lot of women feeling like, I can't take on anymore. It doesn't have to be more. It could be less, but it could be more of what you actually want and less of the stuff that you really don't want. You know, you can put some things aside.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely right. And again, I think what I'm seeing in this generation is they want it, but they want to have downtime too, so they can relax, enjoy their life. And I think, well, you know, my kids would be probably quick to say, look at me, and, you know, I work night and day and so on. But what they do see in me is I love it. And there are times when I just totally disconnect.
Yeah.
And it's just with family and nothing else matters at that point in time. And I'm about to be a grandmother for the first time. I'm so super excited about this. And every time the phone rings, I jump, because any day now it's going to happen.
Oh my gosh. But,
yeah. So that is exciting. But you know what? You don't have to do it all. You don't have to. I think some women fear that if you become an entrepreneur, start your own business, you're never going to have a life.
Mm-hmm.
And the life that matters and life as you know now. And so, and I say that's so not true. I think I have had such a better life, and I think my kids have had such a better life, because I did take the challenge early on, and there was, you know, there were a lot of struggles, you know, lots of events that I missed and first games of whatever that I missed and so on, but there was a lot that I attended, and the ones that I attended weren't routine. They really meant something to me to be there. Mm-hmm. It really meant to the kids that I were there and so on, and it just became, my work became such a part of who we are. Mm-hmm. And as a family, that you can have it all. You can go home at night, not bring home your computer, and still have a life and go back to work. But for the 8 hours a day when you're there, I think it's important to do something that you love to do. Again, that's making a difference. And that you're happy to get up the next morning and go back and do it all over again.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm so in agreement with you. And I mean, I think about my own journey. I'm only 10 years in business now, but the early years was feast or famine and doing whatever it took, which meant missing a lot of stuff, traveling a lot, not being present for like the younger years of my daughter's lives. And I mean, no, I can't get that time back, but I'm at a place now where they've seen, as you said, they've seen the commitment, they've seen the accountability. And I know that that's kind of formative for them. There, of course, were some trade-offs and things that I wish could have been different. But now I look at it and I think I'm building something and I'm really passionate about it. And it doesn't feel like work. It feels like contribution. And that's very different, because the choices I make are far more intentional about where I invest my time. And like in this conversation today, which is very intentional, and so happy that I invested my time in getting to have a conversation with you. So if you were to think about a woman who's considering going after a promotion right now, because a lot of the women that I work with are wanting to get promoted. They want to move into senior leadership. They might even want to move into the C-suite. What advice would you give to those women as they start to think about how to navigate that? Should they, shouldn't they? What would be your sort of last words, advice for those women?
So I think I would say, think about where you are today. Think about where in the organization and who in the organization that you respect and value and what that role is. Think about what else you could contribute to the organization by advancing further. And then think about why you want to do it. And it's why you and your personal life, and there's some financial gain, no doubt about it, and so on. But when you're going to have the conversation with the leadership, why is it going to make a difference for them? Mm-hmm. So, you know, it's important that, you know, for all of our employers now, we all need and want our staff to be happy.
Yeah.
And they need to know that they can have a voice, or they can knock on my door anytime I'm locked in, and so on. And the conversations that I love the most as a leader is when somebody comes in and says, I know this may be a line shot, but I wanted to run this by you. I've been thinking what we don't have is, right. And that if you were open to this, then maybe this is the path we could go. And then the game for the organization as a whole is. And what I think I'm good at here is, and I know there's other pieces to learn, but I think what I bring to your company as a whole and the organization as a whole is whatever. It could be your personality, it could be your enthusiasm for growth. It could be some success you've had in, whether it's in human resources or finance or business development or sales or whatever it is, to, you know, concentrate on that. This is what I've done and what I've been good at, but what I've learned is I'm really good at whatever. And for a lot of people, especially women business leaders, we're really good at building relationships. Mm-hmm. And we're good at talking, and we're good at, you know, we're good at feeling that we can make a connection with clients or with partners or whatever the case may be. And we need to use that to our value. Because what I say, when I talk to my kids all the time, and I say, you know what, you got to get your education. Education is important. It's a base for whatever. But on top of that education, you got to be real. And you got to treat everybody everywhere with kindness and respect all the time. And then you need to prove your value. They'll see the value in you by you showing them your true spirit and your kindness within and your respect for one another. And then no matter what degrees you have, no matter how many letters you got behind your name and so on, unless you have the right personality to, you know, to engage a sense of trust with whoever you're talking with or building a relationship with, it's never going to go anywhere. So you can't learn a personality, but personality is really, really important. And, you know, when you're in business and trying to talk somebody into buying your service for whatever reason, just be personable, be kind to them, and be a good conversationalist, because that's probably the greatest skill most senior business leaders have, is they can carry on a conversation.
Yeah.
And they can do it with passion.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think that's so huge. I mean, I always think that there's a bit of a playbook to moving ahead and looking at, you know, what does it take to succeed at a different level in leadership? And I think all of those points are so, so true. You know, who you are and the confidence that you bring in, how you walk into a room and how you carry yourself. Yeah. How do you, what's the value that you bring to the table? Like, and do you understand the value proposition that you can offer to the business? You know, what you're great at, what your ideas are, what the solutions are. Like, if you were a consultant to the company, what advice would you give them about how they could become, you know, more profitable or have a bigger impact on whatever area that they're looking in? You know, what does the CEO or the executive team really care about? And how can you start to convey that? But that really is dependent on your ability to communicate effectively.
Yeah.
And so if you're diminishing yourself or not using your voice or not being able to like speak up, you're really cutting off your opportunities in the future, because nobody really knows what you stand for or what you believe in or what you care the most about. I remember interviewing another female executive, and she said to me, if I don't know what you're passionate about, why would I ever kind of, you know, like vouch for you? She says, I don't care if you like to sell coffee cups and you're the most passionate person about coffee cups in the entire world. She goes, I don't care about coffee cups, but if you do, and you can tell me why you care the most about that, I'm going to open all the coffee cup doors in the world for you. You know, if you can convey that message and convince me of that. So passion is really, really important. And then how do you communicate and relay that passion?
Yeah.
Beautiful. You're going to be an incredible grandmother, Charlene.
I certainly hope so. I really and truly can't wait. I really have a passion for that, let me tell you that.
I bet. I know. So exciting.
And
so
it's great to be this age and the kids are raised, and now I can really enjoy the grandchildren. My daughter says, at least when I'm home, because I still travel.
Yeah.
I'm really looking forward to it.
Yeah.
So find that passion, whether at home or at work, and integrate them together.
Yeah.
And you know, as I said, just start the talk. Find somebody you trust. And have a conversation with, and you know, I think for all of us, we're always so afraid to ask for a raise, ask for a promotion, address a new idea, so on. But if you don't, you're just going to, again, as I said earlier, it's just going to be Groundhog Day over and over and over
again. I know. And I always tell women, the worst thing that you're going to hear is no.
Yeah,
better day. Exactly. At least you have an answer then, and then you've got more information and you can make a decision on what it is that you want to do next.
Right. Yeah. It could be another opportunity that'll come up altogether if you do hear a no.
Yeah. And if it was me and I heard the no, I'd be like, well, what is it going to take to get to a yes?
Yeah.
That'd be the next question. Right.
You know? Great way of putting it.
Yeah. Well, I just want to say thank you again so much for making time to be here with us and for sharing your wisdom and your experience. And we will be sharing information about your organization. Tell me a little bit about PhoneMed. Is that open to anyone who wants to use it? How do people access that service?
Sure. So in Canada, we're now mostly because we provide the provincial 811 helpline services. So we run the provincial 811 helpline in Newfoundland and Labrador and the mental health crisis line and so on, and, you know, have a footprint in other provinces as well. Mm-hmm. And then we've also developed a software platform to run all of our clinical services. And we license that to organizations all over the world. We're not only using our Canadian and US operations, but have operated in Bangladesh and Greece and Manila and the Philippines, just opened up in Singapore in the last couple of years. So it brought the technology to the world as well. So for when it comes to accessing care, of course, in Canada, in a publicly funded healthcare system, it's typically through the 811 or one of the public service lines. Mm-hmm. In the US, we've got about 2,300 client groups that utilize our service on a private pay system. So they range from physician practices, community health clinics, large employer groups. We do a lot of workers' comp. We've got a couple of hundred universities in the U.S. that use our services to provide care to their student health population, whether that's mental health crisis line, whether that's sexual assault trauma lines, or just, you know, triage nurse advice services and so on. Then we've got patients on biometric devices like oxygen saturation machines or blood pressure cuffs, all throughout the U.S. that are sending the readings to us right here in St. Anthony, Newfoundland. And then we take that alert and farm it out to a nurse in whatever state the patient is located in, because we've got licensure right throughout Canada, as well as nursing licensure right throughout the U.S. as well. And it's keeping people at home. So it's treating them mm-hmm. where they best can be treated mm-hmm. and saving access to the healthcare system for those who need it most, who need that hands-on care.
So important. I know for me, when I first had my children, being able to call 811 and speak to a nurse was the most comforting care, you know, and being able to speak to somebody on the other line who answers the call and is there and can calm your concerns and check in. And, you know, it's life-saving and definitely stress-saving for so many of us. So essential, so important. So thank you for answering the call. In many ways, not only with your business, but also as a powerful female leader here in Atlantic Canada. So thank you so much. And thanks for answering my call and willing to be here and have this conversation with me today, Charlene. Thank you so much.
I'm happy to do so. And until the tides turn, let's keep having the conversations until we're looking at an equal playing field here with men and women, and gender equality is not even discussed anymore. That day will come.
It will.
Until it comes, let's keep talking.
I will. Okay. Well, thank you so much.
Take care.
Bye-bye. Yeah.